Hello, this is Matt with Damaged Goods on Little Rally Radio, and who do I have with me right now?
This is Stacey Wager, and I'm here from the Nevermore Film Festival.
And you guys are doing that this month, February 20th through the 22nd, is that right?
That is correct. It's going to be just a week and a half away for the whole weekend, Friday through Sunday.
And so what exactly is the Nevermore Film Festival?
Well, this is our 16th year, and we've been around since 1999, and basically it's a genre film festival, so we play mostly horror films, but we also bring in films that are science fiction and fantasy and just kind of darker films in general. It's an international and national film festival, so we have films coming in from different countries and also from the U.S., both features and shorts, and we just try to get the cream of the crop and let everyone watch them all weekend in Durham.
Well, that's great, and there's really nothing like that in the area, is there?
No, there's not a whole lot. There's not a lot of competing genre film festivals. There's a lot of different types of festivals. There's the Full Frame Documentary Festival is also in Durham, and they have a lot of regional programs, like we do Retro Phantasma at the Carolina Theater as well, which focuses on horror and other types of films. But no, not like a condensed 2 or 3 day film festival strictly for this particular genre. There's not really a whole lot of those in the area.
How did you get involved with the Nevermore Film Festival?
Well, it's probably been about, I would say, six, seven, eight years, something like that. I don't know, lose track. But I knew a few people over at the Carolina Theater because I started out actually about 11 years ago working with the Full Frame Documentary Festival, and I attended Nevermore because I was a big horror fan, and just sort of once I met people in the Carolina Theater, kind of put out feelers like, hey, do you guys need any help with this festival? You know, I've been coming and volunteering for this other festival, and they did. They needed a little bit of extra help, so I kind of came on board initially just doing artist hospitality, so picking up the attending filmmakers and guests from the airport, kind of being their host while they're in the area and their point of contact, answering questions. Did that for about a year, and then the next year I was asked to be on the selection committee, and so I started working with Nevermore in terms of viewing all the screeners that come in for the features and the shorts that we end up playing. And then the year after that, they asked me to be the chair of the selection committee, so I just kind of got more and more sucked into it. So now I'm like heading up the selection committee. I also manage audience awards and balloting, and I also do the volunteer coordination, and I seek out submissions, solicit submissions from filmmakers, kind of starting as early as September for our February festival.
Well, so how does a film actually get entered into the Nevermore Film Festival?
Well, there's basically two ways. I mean, we don't have a submission fee, which is nice. That's kind of a rarity for film festivals. Most of them charge anywhere from $10 to $50, $100 sometimes even to submit your film just for the privilege of people looking at it and considering it. Either people already know about the festival because we've been kind of gaining in popularity and notoriety over the years, and they just send in their submission to the festival. Or like I said, I start off in September and October kind of looking at what's playing at other genre film festivals, because most of them happen around September or October, around Halloween season, especially for the horror films. So I'll kind of look around at things like the Toronto After Dark Film Festival, Shriek Fest in LA, Fantastic Fest in Austin, and see what's playing and what's popular. And I've also recently maintained friendships with people who, filmmakers who've come to the festival in the past, and as they continue to go to other festivals throughout the year and bring their film with them, they see what's out there and what's playing, and they meet other people. And so I kind of network, and I also do a lot of research, and then I find out who the filmmakers are behind these films, and I reach out to them and ask them if they'd be interested in submitting their film. And so a lot of times they are, and they'll send it in, and then we'll take it from there and see how it goes.
Well, so have you gone out to these other film festivals?
I've been to Toronto After Dark. Did that, I guess it was 2013, so it wasn't this past year, the year before that. And that was actually the first, like, truly genre-specific film festival I'd ever gone to, just as a patron, because I wanted to, like, see how it worked, and just actually get to enjoy watching some films. But I've been to other sort of conventions that have these sort of like elements of film festivals, like Dragon Con in Atlanta has a film festival, and Mad Monster Party in Charlotte has a small film festival. So I do things like that every once in a while as well.
What is your favorite part about going to these?
My favorite part about going to them is getting to just sit there and watch the film and, you know, enjoy it for what it is. And also, a lot of times, if the filmmaker is in attendance, I really enjoy the Q&A that they do, getting to hear what they have to say about the process of filmmaking and sometimes meeting them and talking to them personally. I think that's probably the most fun part for me.
Do you feel like film festivals make it easier to find newer horror movies that are coming out these days?
Yeah, I do. Especially some of the bigger film festivals like Toronto After Dark are going to be the big hits for that year well in advance. So if you kind of know what's playing, you can keep your eye out for it. Like, for instance, I knew about The Babadook playing at Toronto After Dark, and that was like the biggest, probably the most popular indie horror film of last year. Won a ton of awards. I would see it repeatedly at every festival I looked at to see what was playing. It was always The Babadook was playing, and then end of year review list, it was at the top of everyone's list. So I mean, that was on my radar well in advance, so it kind of does help you keep an eye out for what's going to be coming out later in the year. And also, if you get to go to the festivals and you hear the filmmakers talk, you know, a lot of the questions are like, what are you working on next? What's your next project going to be? And so you can kind of get a heads up from that as well.
Well, so there's a few titles that kind of grabbed me from the list. There's one called Valley of the Sasquatch. Isn't it about a family who battles against a group of Sasquatches?
It is a Bigfoot movie. So it is our only Bigfoot movie.
Awesome.
We had one actually a few years ago, and that's the last one we had. But it's nice, you know, as we're taking in the submissions, we try to, I mean, we definitely judge everything on the merit of the film, but it's nice when you can get this sort of good balance of types of horror movies. So it's fun to throw something in there like, hey, there's a Bigfoot movie. You know, you don't see those every day, as opposed to having like 5 werewolf movies and 5 haunted house movies,
right,
or something. So yeah, that's playing. That is one of our 10 features that's playing at the festival this year.
Well, so what about this movie, Mega Muerte? Did I say that correct?
Mega Muerte. That one is actually a lot of fun. So fun fact about that one is we had a short film come in either last year or the year before called Metal Creepers. And it was accepted to the festival. It played in the shorts program. It was a Spanish film. And it was kind of your typical story of heavy metal being linked to Satanism and demons. And so it played really well. And apparently these guys went on to expand on that short. And this has happened a few times in the past. They created a feature-length film based on it, and they took the story and they just broadened it and threw a lot more special effects in there. And it's actually, it's a lot of fun. Like if you're into anything along the lines of like Ghoulies and Critters, and you like the little funny animatronic kind of critters in there, then it's definitely going to be a crowd pleaser, I think, for that type of personality.
Well, so also there's the Carolina Theater does other festivals too, like I think you mentioned the Retro Phantasma Festival.
Yeah, it's not, Retro Phantasma is not actually a festival, but it started off as a once a month double feature, and it had been going on for quite a few years. I'm not exactly sure how long, but it was originally just horror, and it sort of became so popular that eventually they added, instead of doing once a month just a double feature for, now it's like 3 times a month, almost every Friday. And they have one Friday, it's like comedy, or sort of like classic films like Tootsie and Raising Arizona and things like that. And then there's the horror double feature, and then they also do a horror classics where they bring back, you know, old black and white kind of Hammer style types of horror films. So yeah, they do a lot with that.
Well, the one I was most excited about was a double feature of Aliens and Killer Clowns from Outer Space. That's pretty amazing.
That's a good one. The festival director and kind of managing director of the Carolina Theater's programming is Jim Carl, and he does a fantastic job in matching up some movies and making some really cool and fun double features. We just had the annual Nevermore fundraiser, I think last weekend, and it was Suspiria and Cannibal Holocaust.
Nice.
Which, you know, if you've ever seen Cannibal Holocaust, I was actually kind of shocked that they put that on the bill. But a lot of people showed up, and I'm sure a lot of people left a little queasy that night.
What's the whole story with Cannibal Holocaust, for those who don't know?
You know, I watched it once, and that was probably more times than I ever needed to watch it. I won't watch it again. And if you look at the Carolina Theater or the Nevermore Film Festival Facebook page, when he started posting that they were playing Cannibal Holocaust, I saw a lot of people commenting like, oh, I'm going to pass on that one. You know, I can't deal with it, because essentially there are some scenes where they harm animals, and it was filmed in a very, you know, cinema verite way where they were actually killing the animals and they were actually filming them dying. It was banned in the U.S. It was banned in a lot of other countries as well, so it's kind of a big deal that now you can just go out and watch it on a Friday night on the big screen, because you couldn't for a long time. You couldn't get that movie, so it's nice and it's available. But it's not for everyone.
Well, didn't the filmmaker get arrested because some of the actors, they die in the movie, but not actually in real life? And I guess the court system thought that they had actually killed these people, so they had to bring people to the court to prove that they were not actually dead.
Yeah, I do remember that. I mean, it is filmed in such a realistic manner that, yeah, I think they did actually think that some of the actors were dead. So they had to prove them, you know, they had to show up in person to prove their own, you know, existence was still intact. So, kind of a crazy movie.
That is. Well, so what have been some of your favorites from past years?
Well, there was a film called Found that played a couple years ago that was really good. It was very dark and brutal, and it was one of those weird movies that kind of came in at the end of the season, and I was just completely tired of watching films, and it was like, what is this crap? I don't want to watch it. Threw in the DVD player and was actually just blown away. It was really well done. There's been a lot of really good shorts, you know, which is always nice to see, because you can see features all the time, but shorts are harder to really find. So, you know, one of my favorites actually is a film called Treevenge, which I watch annually every Christmas season as a tradition now. It was a short film that played, I don't know, probably like 5 or 6 years ago, about Christmas trees that take revenge on on the brutal lumberjacks and basically all of mankind. You know, they come to life, they kill a bunch of people after being, you know, harvested and decorated and humiliated. So, and that one was actually filmed by the guy who ended up filming Hobo with a Shotgun and did some of the ABCs of Death shorts as well. So it's nice to see some of these people who make even just short films go on to do bigger and better things, and I can always think back to, oh, that person played a film at Nevermore years ago, and it's kind of cool to have that continuance of being able to keep track of what people are doing.
Did you hear about speaking of the ABCs of Death, did you hear about the teacher who showed the ABCs of Death to her classroom and got in trouble for that?
Yes, actually, One of my friends on Facebook who had a short film submitted last year, and he has another one accepted in the festival this year. He posted that on Facebook, and I saw it, and I was like, oh my God, what on earth? Like, and she showed it to multiple period. Like, didn't
right.
She? It was like, it wasn't just one class. She was a substitute teacher. She was there, and she put it on for one class, and then put it on again or something. I don't know. Like, how? I mean, I can barely tolerate that film myself, and I have a pretty high threshold, but I couldn't even fathom showing it to high school kids. But on the other hand, she got slapped with like 3 or 4 felonies, which it seems a bit excessive for just showing an inappropriate film to high schoolers.
Well, I think her defense was that she didn't realize she was trying to teach him Spanish or something. It was like a Spanish class or something strange like that. But, yeah, you figure after multiple viewings, you'd figure out it's not an educational film.
Yeah, there are some really...
Just the title, I mean, gives it away, right?
Yeah, just the title is enough. But there are some really disturbing shorts in that. Yeah.
Or just perhaps a quick Google search, maybe, to determine if it's an appropriate movie or not.
Well, that's expecting too much of a substitute teacher to actually care enough to research something. I'm sure it was... But the funny thing is, like, where did she get that? You know, if she doesn't know what it is, surely she didn't get it from the school library. I mean, did a kid bring it in and say, hey, can we watch this? You know?
I could be wrong, but I think she got it off of Netflix, so... Figure.
Oh, she just streamed it.
Yeah.
you can do anything these days.
That's right. Maybe you could have her come speak at the next Nevermore Film Festival, right?
Long gone are the day. Like, I remember the first time I got in trouble in school. It was like in fifth grade, and I had brought in a copy of The Lost Boys on VHS.
Nice.
And I was supposed to be, I think, tutoring kindergartners or something, but I actually snuck into the library and dragged, like, the huge TV cart with the VCR, like, into a corner of the library and popped in Lost Boys, and, yeah. That's a far different time from, I'm just going to stream Netflix to my class and show them this crazy independent horror film.
Yeah, when did you actually get into horror movies? Have you been into them since you were really, really young?
Yes. Since I was, like 8 or 9, like very, very young. Well, maybe even younger than that. I think the first horror film I really remember watching was Poltergeist, and I was around the same age as the character Carol Ann when it came out. So I was very young. I think I was like 6. And I remember it scaring the bejesus out of me, and that probably, you know, started it, my interest in horror at that age. But, you know, there were things that my mom... She liked horror as well, and she would let me kind of sneak a peek at some things, but she would, like, forbid me from seeing other things, which, of course, just piqued my interest like crazy. So I would sneak out into the living room and turn on HBO late at night and watch, you know, Nightmare on Elm Street, and I was obsessed with Basket Case when I was, like, 10, 11 years old. I caught a part of that on HBO at some point and was like, this is amazing. And so, yeah, I mean, I would go to the, back in the day, like really aging myself here, but I would go to the video store and, you know, go straight to the horror section and look through all the videos on the shelves and pick out horror movies every weekend to watch. So I did that, you know, all through my middle school and high school years. And so...
Well, that was always kind of an adventure going to the video store because you really didn't know what you were going to get unless you were getting Star Wars or something that you've already seen before. But if you were going to the horror movie section, it was quite a gamble because you could find the most amazing movie ever or it could be a total dud.
Yeah, it was fun because you didn't have that plan. You didn't know what you were going to go get. And so we would just go to the video store. And, I mean, I'm talking like... early 90s, so, you know, it's all VHS, it's all, you know, these big boxes on shelves with the writing on the back, you know, I mean, it's different now. I mean, you know, you just get stuff out of a red box, you don't even get, like, the actual DVD case or anything anymore, so, but yeah, you would just peruse, and kind of things would jump out at you based on the artwork or the title, you know, and nowadays it's like... I don't know. It's that's not as much of a draw for people because you don't really look at the artwork, you know? I would rent things that sounded horrible, but they had a really cool picture on the front.
Right, right. Well, so I had to mention this because I know Retro Phantasma, you're going to be screening Friday the 13th in June. What do you think about the Friday the 13th movies?
You know, slashers really aren't my favorite because they're kind of just formulaic. I mean, standard stuff. They might have been groundbreaking at the time, you know, when they came out, or if you were around in the 80s, they might have been terrifying to you if you were a teen because, you know, that was a different time. You know, kids could go out and unattended and you weren't scared you were going to get raped or killed all the time like kids are now. So, I mean, when it did happen, it was way scarier. So I can see that being a draw for that time. But now, like, the reality is that happens to people all the time, and it's not really as entertaining anymore. It's kind of like, I don't really like torture porn either because it's just... you know, if there's going to be a lot of blood and guts and gore, I want it to be ridiculous and over the top and hilarious. I want to see amputated limbs, like, flopping around and people being hit with them. You know, I don't want...
Something's not really, like, oh, this can happen walking down the street.
Yeah, yeah, I don't want to see someone being slowly tortured and fingernails being pulled out. It makes me cringe. Like, and that's the interesting thing. It's like I'm really drawn to horror and gore, but there's a very firm line between fiction and reality for me. And like, it's not entertaining anymore if it becomes too realistic.
Well, do you think that the success of certain shows like The Walking Dead, do you think that's helped things like the Nevermore Film Festival draw more attention to it?
That's a good question. I mean, I think horror it's experiencing a resurgence. You know, it's gone very mainstream in some ways, but I think that there's always been a group of people who really enjoy that stuff, and right now they're just enjoying the ease of the accessibility to it more. You know, I'm not sure if it's really tapping into a whole new crowd. I think people either like horror or they don't like horror, and the fact that Walking Dead's on, you know, it's not going to sway you one way or the other. I know people who literally can't watch horror because it gives them nightmares, you know. People I've talked to who have children, you know, they might have been really into horror when they're younger, but now they've got a kid, they're like, now it like really upsets me to think about these things. So, you know, I don't think it's really done much in terms of changing people's perceptions, but it's just a lot more available, you know?
Do you feel like the horror trend comes in waves? Because I know, obviously, in the 80s, you had Nightmare on Elm Street and Friday the 13th, and that, you know, of course, you had some of the Halloween movies, and Child's Play also, so those were pretty big for the time. Then I feel like there was a lull for a while, and then it's kind of come back. So do you feel like it comes in waves as far as, like, pop culture trends go?
Yeah, I think that's a pretty good description. I mean, definitely it was really, really big in the 80s. And then I'm trying to think of, like, big horror movies in the 90s, and there really weren't as many that I can recall. I mean, they're always there, but like I said, it's just the accessibility. Sometimes they're really popular, and they're everywhere you look, and then sometimes they kind of, the scene just dries up for a while, you know? And right now it's definitely, you know, it's been getting better the past few years, which I appreciate, and I'm sure a lot of other people who are interested in the genre enjoy that, you know, because you don't want to watch crappy horror films. But there was a period of time, like, I remember even just like maybe 8 or 9 years ago, I would go see pretty much any horror film that played in the movie theater, and I was like, well, quite frankly, this is just crap. You know, it would get one star, but I would still go pay for it and watch it because it was the only horror movie that was going to be playing for like 3 or 4 months, and I'd want to see it. But now it's like, oh, I've got my choice. You know, I can stream stuff, I can go to the theater and watch the new stuff, I can buy stuff on demand that you can't even see in the theaters around here. So you can kind of get a steady flow of it, and things have been getting, the quality has been getting better, especially with independent films. Like, one of the things I'm really excited about for Nevermore this year is this is the first year that we don't have any studio films. Like, typically we have, 12 to 14 slots for feature films, and honestly, sometimes it's hard to find enough good independent films to actually fill those slots, so we have to use some studio films, some feature films, or some sort of, like, retro throwback films, like some Dawn of the Dead or Evil Dead, you know, something that's going to draw people in to fill out the program. But this year, actually, we had so many good independent films, we didn't feel like we had to, you know, pad it with feature films and high-budget films. I mean, the stuff that we have is all independent. None of it's, like, really on a major studio. And it's all really solid stuff, so I'm very excited about that.
Well, that's great. Well, so do you have a favorite of the... Do you have a favorite director as far as horror movies go?
I have a few favorite directors. I mean, I love Raimi. I mean, you can't not love him. Wes Craven's awesome. I really like Lucky McKee, he's kind of not really well known, but he did films like May. I don't know if you've ever heard of May. It's a fantastic little film. It's got Angela Bettis and Jeremy Sisto in it. And it's kind of a, basically a girl who doesn't have any friends and is kind of an outcast and people make fun of her and she decides to make her own friend nice. By taking pieces of people who she likes and putting them together into her own friend. And Lucky McKee's a really great director. He also did a film called The Woman or Woman, which is kind of about basically a wild woman that these people find out in the woods and they kind of bring her in and try to tame her, but it's like, who's really wild? Is it the uncivilized person or is it the civilized people who are bringing her into their home? Like, so he's a great kind of modern director that I think is really underrated.
Well, so what films are you the most excited about this year?
So this year, there are a few, you know, it's hard to pick favorites because I'm trying to be impartial, but there are definitely a couple that stand out for me. And I think my two favorites from this year are Blood Punch and Savage Land. Savage Land is a mockumentary style film, which typically you wouldn't think that would work very well as a horror genre. But actually, I've seen a lot of mockumentaries. I've seen comedy mockumentaries. I've seen, you know, this is actually the best fake documentary I've ever seen. Like, these people do not look like actors. They look like real people being interviewed. They seem very genuine. And honestly, if you were just flipping channels and you saw this, like, you would think it was a real documentary. And it's based... It's a story about, it's set on the border of Texas and Mexico, and a whole town of people are brutally slaughtered, and there's one survivor, and it's this Mexican man. And so it's kind of got some political undertones about, you know, blaming the Mexican for this whole, you know, crazy slaughter that couldn't have possibly been done by one person. But beyond that, it's actually, it's really well done, and there are some photographs that are found, and they're kind of the film is interwoven with these photos from this man's camera that actually show bits and pieces of what happened that night as they're recanting or retelling the story. So it's the photographs themselves are really creepy, and the whole story is just really well done. And then Blood Punch is kind of like, and this is why I love horror, because it's like totally opposite from that, like very, very different side of the spectrum. But it's a quirky, kind of irreverent film, but it's surprising. It's like no one's heard of it, you know. It's just this little film, but it's so well done, and it's basically about this love triangle, initially set in like drug rehab center, where a girl kind of comes in and goes into this rehab center asking for someone to help her cook up some meth. Like, so it kind of starts off like, okay, well, that's kind of weird, you know, but she finds someone who agrees to do like this quick job and like make a bunch of meth, make a bunch of money, goes off with this guy and her boyfriend. And that's really all I can say, because without giving away too much, but it gets extremely surreal. And it's kind of got elements of, if you've ever seen the movie Go, and the movie Triangle. I don't know if that's a fantastic one.
What's the Triangle about?
Triangle is, it's like a, it screws with your head kind of movie. It's sort of a time-bending film about a woman who might be off her rocker, but you can't really tell, and she basically goes on a boat for a day with some people, and it gets you know, capsized in a wave, and they find this abandoned ship out at sea, and they get on it, and like all this weird stuff starts happening, but they can't get kind of stuck in this weird time loop. So it's really fascinating. I had to watch it like 3 times to kind of understand it. But yeah, Blood Punch kind of borrows heavily from that sort of like time loop aspect. But it's also got a little bit of element of Shallow Grave, which is another kind of older favorite film of mine. But I would highly recommend that one, just because it's funny, it's modern, the characters are really entertaining. It's gory without being really too gross or over the top. So I think the crowds will really like it.
Well, so what do you think is the biggest misconception about horror movies?
The biggest misconception? I think the biggest misconception is that they are... I think about things like what films get acknowledged by, like, the Academy. Horror films kind of aren't taken very seriously, and I think there's this misconception that they can't be quality films. They can't be character-driven, interesting, plot films. And they really are a lot out there that do meet those qualifications. We are What We Are is a great example of that. It's a film that was just... It was like a South American film, and they remade it in an American version. That's the one I'm actually talking about. But it's very dark, very character-driven. The people are interesting, but it's still ultimately a horror film. And and same thing with The Babadook that was very popular this year. Also, it plays very heavily on the relationship between a mother and a child, and it has all these emotional aspects to it. But it's creepy as hell, It's scary and dramatic at the same time. So,
well, do you get genuinely creeped out by movies, or do you have the suspension of disbelief?
I'll admit I'm a little bit jaded, and I have been for a long time. It's really hard to scare me. When it does happen, it's like this amazing experience that I get super excited about. Jump scares, they happen. That's like a reflex. That's like getting your knee popped at the doctor. You can't help it. If the door opens up and you're in a crowded theater, you're gonna jump. So I get scared that way, but like that lingering feeling of being nervous and looking over your shoulder and not wanting to go home to an empty house, like that doesn't happen very often. It's happened a few times to me in the past couple of years. It actually happened with one of the Paranormal Activity movies. I saw that and I was like, I really don't want to go to sleep tonight. I saw that movie called Dark Skies that came out like a year or two ago. That was more of a setting thing. It was kind of a creepy movie about sort of like horror, but sort of aliens. But I was on a work trip and I was staying in a hotel across the street from a movie theater. And I was like, I'm going to go watch a scary movie by myself. And I walked across the street and there was no one in the theater. And I watched the whole movie by myself. And then I had to walk alone down a dark, empty strip mall parking lot and cross the street all by myself. And I just was like really nervous, kind of looking behind me like, oh, something going to jump out, and then the Ring actually kind of scared the crap out of me when I saw it in the theater. Mostly just because as soon as I got home, the phone rang and it was like, oh my god, that's weird, I can't answer it right now, I'm like rattled. So, but it happens every once in a while, and it's a fun sensation, it's a fun experience when it does happen.
I feel like horror movies have one of the most rabid fan bases of any type of genre of films, perhaps of any of them, and I was just wondering why do you think people are so dedicated to horror movies as opposed to some other genres?
I think because it can be kind of addicting. There's this documentary being made. I think it might already be made or it's in the process of being made called, I think it's called, I can't remember exactly what it's called, but it's basically questioning like why people like horror movies. And it might be just why horror or something like that. And they've interviewed all these horror directors, and I was like, oh, I'd love to have done that. Like, I wish I would have thought of that project, because it's something that I think about a lot. Like, why do people like horror? Why do people like watching these things? And for people who don't enjoy watching horror films, that's always a question they have. Like, how can you watch these people get carved up, and why do you find that entertaining? You're sick, But, I think, it's a, my understanding, kind of reading the psychology behind it, is it's a safe feeling of being scared. Like, and it's kind of, just like all other entertainment, it's an escape, people deal with stressful lives and scary things all the time, and like, maybe it helps you handle it a little better in real life if you kind of get scared on the side and you know you're not really in danger and you know no one's really getting hurt, but you kind of have that scared reaction to it, but it's tolerable and it's kind of like riding a roller coaster. Like, you know, you're excited and you're scared and you're nervous, but you know you're ultimately, hopefully, going to be safe. And you're not really plummeting to your death, but you get that sensation. And that is sort of an adrenaline rush, and people get addicted to it. And I think that's why a lot of people are kind of drawn to horror.
Yeah, I think so. And I think also the fact that for your average horror movie fan, the fact that you know none of these people are getting harmed and they're all going to be walking away from the set, okay, it's just like you said, it's a nice escape.
Yeah, and I mean, my favorite sort of subgenre is horror comedy, you know, and anything that can kind of turn the genre on its head and, like, look at things in a different way or in a clever way. Like, Tucker and Dale versus Evil, I think, is just kind of one of the most brilliant comedy horror films to come out, like, in the past decade. I mean, it's basically a couple of redneck guys, you know, who are out in the woods and they're actually being tormented by a bunch of like college kids, you know, like frat boys and sorority girls, the ones who are typically in your average slasher movie, the ones that are the victims. It just turns the whole thing upside down and says, all right, well, what if these guys are actually the murderers and you know, the crazy redneck guys out in the woods are the victims and they're being chased by these people. And it was all based on misconception and comment. It just was awesome. It's a really fun watch.
Well, so if someone said, I hate horror movies, I want you to prove me wrong, like, show me something I'm going to love, like, what would you show them?
Oh, my God. That is a really hard question. You know, it would really depend on the person, because I think, you know, if you're coming into it with that attitude, you know, I would have to know you well enough to say, all right, what can this person tolerate? Because, you know, I'm not going to show you Cannibal Holocaust, for example, if I know you're a vegan. you know, so I don't know. I think for me, like I said, horror comedy is my favorite, you know, and I would probably go with something classic like the Evil Dead trilogy. My favorite horror film is American Werewolf in London, you know, nice. Because I think that to me just touches on all the elements. It's all my personal touch points, you know. It's got great special effects. It's got the comedy. It's got just a touch of romance, but not too schmaltzy. You know, and it's got a very classic, unhappy ending that just, you know, and I've watched it so many times. I've seen it on the big screen several times, and it's been, what, like 25 years since it was made, 30 years, I don't know, but it still holds up, you know. So honestly, it's my favorite. I would probably show people that one, because it's got a little bit of everything. It's got a little bit of drama, a little bit of comedy, a little bit of romance, but a lot of horror, and it's really well done.
Well, what is your take on horror movie remakes?
You know, I used to be such a purist and an elitist, and I would just poo-poo all over. I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe they're going to remake this. I can't believe they're going to remake that. And when they said they were remaking Evil Dead, I almost, like, flipped out, you know. Like, you can't do that. You can't do that. But honestly, you know, it's just like everything else. I mean, times are changing. We're reinventing ourselves all the time. There are good stories out there, and there are good stories that need to be told to a newer and different audience, and they're not going to be as receptive to seeing those stories and, you know, being introduced to those characters if they're watching something that's 30 years old. I mean, like, I personally don't enjoy horror classics. I don't watch a lot of old black and white Frankenstein and Dracula films. You know, I want to watch things that were made in the past 20 or 30 years. And the more recent, the better, the more applicable it is, because you can apply modern special effects, you can apply modern technology, the film quality looks better, acting is better generally now, writing is better generally now. So, you know, I'm not opposed to remakes, and I think some of the remakes have been really good. What I am kind of morally opposed to is, like, the American remake of foreign films that comes out, like, 6 months later. It just seems very I don't know, xenophobic to be like, oh, this is a great movie, but it's not American, so we're going to make it American now, and boom, there you go. I mean, they did it, but the films that have done that, like, I've watched both the American and the original, like, Let the Right One In and Let Me In, they were both really good. You know, it's the same story, and they were both really good, so I'm, you know, like I said, I'm kind of, like, morally opposed to it, but at the same time, I can't say, like, one is not as good as the other.
Well, I think what's interesting about that is that sometimes people, they don't want to read subtitles, and I never had a problem with that, but it seems like some of the general movie viewing public seems to have a dislike for having to read while they're watching a movie.
It's kind of lazy, but again, like, I can't... I can understand it, because I, by the time I get around to watching movies, oftentimes it's late at night, I'm kind of half asleep anyway, and reading puts me to sleep in my old age now, so if I have to read my movie, there have been many times where I've gotten a foreign film from Netflix, and I sat it down next to my TV, and it would still be there like 4 weeks later, because every night I'd come home and be like, oh, I just don't want to read my movie tonight, I just want to watch something mindless, and get sucked into it. And also, like, I don't know, depending on the film, the subtitles may not be good.
Yeah.
Or they may be, you know, hard to read because they didn't use the right color on the background, or they distract you because you're not actually looking at people's expressions because you're reading what they're saying. And so there are some things that where I feel like, you know, subtitles do take away from the film, but generally I don't think it's a problem. But there are a lot of people who just don't care for it.
Well, so where can people go if they want to hear or read more information about these movies?
Well, you can just do a Google search for the Nevermore Film Festival. There's a website out there through the Carolina Theater for the festival. It's got synopses of all the films that are playing. We also have three shorts programs. We've got U.S. shorts, foreign shorts, and long-form shorts, which are shorts that are 20 minutes to 30 minutes long, generally. It's got all of the information about the festival. It's also got the schedule up, so you can see what times and what days all the films are playing. Generally, all of our programs play twice. So, if you're working on Friday night, you can't come out, chances are it'll be playing Saturday afternoon or Sunday afternoon as well. So there's pretty much a chance for everybody to see everything, you know, on at least 2 days of the festival. Tickets are, I think, like $10, but you can also buy a 10-pack of tickets through the website, or you can go to the box office. The 10-pass is $80. So it's a little bit cheaper than buying individual tickets. So, for instance, if you're going with a friend or a partner and you want to see a handful of movies, it might be a better deal to do that. Single tickets are $10, and they go on sale this Friday, the 13th.
Nice.
Well-timed. We also have a Facebook page. Again, just, you know, get on Facebook and search for Nevermore Film Festival and Retro Phantasma. And that's where we kind of post everything that's playing, you know, periodically for all the retro screenings and also for Nevermore. So it's also a good resource.
Well, that sounds great. Well, thanks for talking to us today on Little Wally Radio.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
We'll see you at the theater.
I hope so. Bye.